What's good, mi gente? This is your girl, Odalis Jasmine, and y'all are listening to the one and only platform, Hello Latino. Today, I'm talking to the homie, Lester Larios, mi amigo nicaragüense, my fellow first-gen Latino in tech. The list goes on. Lester is an LA native with years of experience in higher education, nonprofit organizations, community development, and more. Son to immigrant parents, the oldest of siblings and cousins, the unofficial lawyer, event planner, advocate, etc. Lester knows the challenges and resilience of navigating a world where you don't know what you don't know and you figure it out as you go. Ooh, I'm not a rapper though. Specifically, Lester is passionate about men's mental health and issues, empowering others and inspiring Black and brown men and communities to thrive. Ojalá que disfruten esta conversación, y'all. Y'all, give a warm welcome to Lester. He is first time podcast guest.
Yeah.
All right. We love to see it. Lester, I am so excited that you're here, and I've been impatiently waiting for this moment because the first conversation you and I had, I think it was like a little coffee chat because folks had been connecting us and we ended up talking for days about the first gen experience. And I was like, I need to have this guy on my podcast. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's amazing. And the fact that this is my first podcast, I wouldn't have it any other way than being here with yourself. So gracias amiga for the invitation. And yeah, I'm excited for the conversation. So let's go.
Yes. And you have like a dope podcast voice. I feel like la mia, like there needs to be some practice, but like you have the, what do you call it? You know that station that used to play the oldies? I forgot what the name of
the guy was.
But your vibe. That's your vibe.
That's funny because, you know, as a kid, like I remember like riding around with my parents like late at night, and then the DJ comes on, it's like, this is 103.5 smooth jazz and something like that. And I was just like, I just remember as a kid being like, I don't know what that is, but I want to sound like that. So, you know, people have told me throughout the years, like, you know, you should do some voice acting and stuff like that. But it's one of those things I'm like, yeah, if I can do it, I would love to. So thanks.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's listening right now like, who is Lester? Because his voice is just like made for radio. But I want to start with the first question that I start every podcast episode with. And that is, how do you identify and why?
How do I identify? Well, I identify as a first gen Latino male, pronouns he, him, his, él también, right? I was throwing in the Spanish in there. And really for me, the reason I identify that way is because it's part of the story, part of my, you know, just part of the identity that I've been able to really embrace and learn and accept throughout these years. And at the same time, continue to learn. And through the more that I learn, the more that I go through life, it's one of those things, the more I start to either add, celebrate, or, transform some of my identity experiences as well.
Cool. We're going to jump into that. I'm like bookmarking that. I love to start with not your story, but the story that brought you to the U.S. I think the beautiful thing about being first gen is that so much of our story is rooted in that immigration, right? It's rooted in our parents, nuestros abuelos coming from their countries, or even us immigrating if we were immigrants ourselves to this country. And that's where not the story begins, but the chapter begins of just the first gen experience. So I'm curious for you, where did that immigration story start? And talk to us about what that story is, if you know it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll love to. Well, I'm a proud son of two Nicaraguense parents. So both my parents immigrated here from Nicaragua.
Centroamericanos.
There you go. Hey.
I guess estamos.
We got to represent, right? All the way.
Got
so,
you.
Yeah, both of my parents immigrated here from Nicaragua. It was one of those things where they didn't really have a choice. There's a civil war going on in Nicaragua at the time. And from the stories that I've heard from my parents, is just, it was definitely one of those things that like, man, your life should be a movie. You know, like I remember my dad told me that he left the day before his high school graduation ceremony. And he never actually got to see his high school diploma until about 3 years ago. And he's been in the U.S. for over 30 years now. And it was one of those things where it's just like you hear these stories. But so my dad left, he fled the war because he was about to be drafted in went to Mexico, lived there for 4 years, and then was able to make it to the U.S. My mom, sorry for context, my dad was like a country boy in Nicaragua. He lived in a village, spent most of his days out in the wilderness playing around, always told me stories and things like that about like the animals he would come across, all these crazy things. My mom grew up like in the actual city, dirt poor. And I mean like legit dirt poor. I actually got to, the first time I went to Nicaragua, I visited the plot of dirt where she lived. Like it was eye opening to me. And she made it to the US and my parents met at a party. They got invited to, you know, one of those family fiestas. And from the story goes that my mom was with my aunt at the time. They were just chilling, sitting at a table. And then when my dad walked in, and my mom literally looked at my dad, she looked at my aunt and told him, "He's mine." And she went up to him and the rest is history. Now, you know, they spent over 25 years married, and, you know, later on they had myself, the two brothers, and then just kind of like the family started expanding from there. Aunts, uncles, you know, the village, the, you know, one of the things I love about our culture is that even though we have these individual stories, it's also a communal story, right? So it's like, it's the story of my family, but it involves so many of my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, you know, family friends that are not blood, but their family still, you know? So, you know, fast forward up till now, like we're here and we're thriving, thankfully, thank God. And, you know, trying to do the best that we can to give back and at the same time continue to advance the cause. So, like, aquí estamos.
Aquí estamos. I love your mom for that. She's like, that's mine. And the fact that she went for it, I love that energy. And I love that like Latina vibe of just, you know, like, I'm going to get it. But I love this story for so many reasons, because you touched on something that I feel is important to expand on a little bit. And it's the civil war that was happening in Nicaragua. One thing that I love about this podcast and the people who are on it is this education around why immigration happens. It's sometimes for refuge, it's sometimes because of politics happening in the country, or sometimes because of poverty. And I want to, if you're comfortable with it, if you want to share some knowledge around what happened in Nicaragua, and just let me tell y'all, I think Nicaragua is one of the most resilient countries that exists in Latin America because of what it's been through, just year after year, decade after decade. So I'd love for you to just kind of paint some context and have a little of an educational moment with the audience on what happened in Nicaragua and why these immigrants came.
Yeah, I would love to. You know, as we were listening, I got to listen a little bit of your story, and even I know you dove deep into your own history, your own, you know, knowledge about your culture, where you came from. So it was really cool to hear that, because I did something similar. These past few years, I dove deep into the history of Nicaragua, specifically because I helped start a nonprofit with a friend of mine to do some work down there. But the history of Nicaragua, like back, like I would say the 1950s, even before that, Nicaragua was like the center of, well, physically the center of Central America, but it was like the hub. Everything was golden in Nicaragua. It was like one of the most wealthiest and thriving countries in Central America. But as always, there was always this political strife, a lot of back and forth. And we had some dictators come through, some government powers come through, and they just kind of started erupting, and it just war after war after war. So there was a lot of periods of just a lot of civil war, a lot of civil unrest. And what ended up happening is that during the time, like as time progressed, especially like in the 1950s with, you know, the Cold War, Russia, U.S., these global superpowers started getting involved within the country. So you had like the Russia backing up one side of the Nicaraguenses. You had the U.S. backing another side of the Nicaraguenses, right? And essentially became this thing, this power struggle of like, hey, we're going to make Nicaragua our battlefield, but we don't really care about your people. And whoever ended up winning, they would be the ones in power. They would be the ones pulling the resources. And then afterwards, you know, when that didn't work out, when the people had enough, another civil war would erupt, and the sides would switch. So now where you had Russia backing up one side, now the U.S. was backing that side. You had U.S. backing the original side, now Russia's backing that side. It was just this constant back and forth. And throughout the years, because of all the fighting, because of all the the involvement of just different powers, the people left, especially like in the 80s, Nicaragua was always almost deserted by its own people, because it left the country so torn up. A lot of people don't know this, but originally the Panama Canal was actually meant to be built in Nicaragua, because geographically it just works out a little bit better because of the systems of the lakes and stuff. And with all the powers that were happening, with all the wars that were happening, that actually took that opportunity away. If that would have happened, then Nicaragua wouldn't be where it is right now. It's actually one of the most poorest countries in the world. And even though it's faced a lot, I love what you said, it's very resilient, because it's true. Like, through all the wars that they faced, all the political powers that they faced, all the intervention that they faced, they still come out the other side, you know, with hope, with love, with kindness. You go down there and people treat you with so much kindness and care. They're very grateful. And yeah, I got a chance to travel back there earlier this year in April. And I got a chance to do a workshop on some leadership stuff. And I remember just sitting there listening to the people's stories and listening to my parents' stories and things like that. And it just kind of hit me. And I'm just like, you guys have the spirit of resilience. You guys have the spirit of revolutionaries. You guys have the spirit that continues to allow you to keep going. And the greatest part is that we get to carry that same spirit on. Like, these are the same spirit of our ancestors. The things that they've learned gets passed on to us. We get to continue that. And the more that we thrive, we're able to come back and really rebuild, give back, and invest in the things that oftentimes, you know, don't get a chance to just because of circumstances beyond our control.
That's so beautiful, because I was just going to ask you, how do you make sense of your history and what you've learned about Nicaragua? How do you make sense of that in your present moment, in your life now? Because as you were explaining, I'm like, this kind of sounds like Lester. Right. And so how do you make sense of that history when it comes to just your experience as a first gen Latino?
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, one, I love history. I love learning the stories of how everything came to be, where we came from, and finding meaning out of it. It really is all about perspective and what you do with it. And sometimes the reality can be very, very difficult and very hard. But we always have the choice whether to let how we're going to let that define us and how we're going to let that shape us, right? So when I hear the story of Nicaragua, you hit it dead on. I see the spirit of resilience. It's just like, okay, well, how do I carry on that resilience into the things that I do now, right? When I'm faced with things at work that may not be as big as wars or, you know, poverty or all these other things, but they do add stress to my life, or they are challenging, I'm like, well, if they could face that resilience, I can do this too, right? When I'm facing situations, especially as first gen, I mean, we've talked about this. We live first gen lives. It's not just about first gen college student or first gen here in America, but like we're navigating so many firsts. And that takes a resilience that, you know, that we have to learn and embody from the people that came before us, right? So listening to those stories, those characters, the people involved, the lessons that they learned, I love to just soak it all up and then decide, okay, how do I learn from this, and what do I apply to my life to make sure that we're always moving forward, right? That yes, we look back, but we're always moving forward and making sure that we're advancing the culture, the people, because this really is a community thing. Somos familia. Es el pueblo. Es el pueblo.
It's a pueblo out here, 100%. Speaking of just your first generation experience, one thing that I explore a lot in the podcast is being a first gen Latina woman. And I talk a lot about it, what that feels like, what that looks like. And now I want to talk about being a first gen Latino man and what that experience looks like. And I always say, anytime I talk about just the first gen Latina experience, I'm like, that's not to say that men don't experience their own thing. This is what women experience. And so I feel lucky enough now to have the platform with you to talk about your experiences as a man, as a first gen Latino, as a Latino man, and how you've navigated that experience. I mean, for 20 years of life. wink, wink.
Thank you. No, I mean, I love that. I love this topic. It is definitely one of my passions. And I think we've talked about that before, especially working with Black and brown men. It is near and dear to my heart, you know. So before what I used to do in terms of career, I worked with first generation college students. And it was one of those things because I was always in it, like it was a day-to-day thing. I was always immersed in it. And so this was a constant thing that I was always thinking about. But I also got to see the beauty of both experiences, right? Like, I know my first gen Latina women are killing it, like in education and their careers. You know, right now in Hispanic Heritage Month, you know, I didn't even know this, that of the, like the businesses that are starting, like in the US, the fastest, you know, small businesses that are starting popping up, 1 in 5 of them are Latinas. So literally Latinas are leading the way in creating small businesses, right? Like, come on, right? And like, even yourself, right? Like even starting this podcast and during COVID and getting to the places where you're at now. I saw the interview. Come on, amiga. I saw the interview with, there you go. See? So it's like, there's the beauty of those experiences. And at the same time, like, yeah, I have been able to see the differences between men and women. Like, and as a first gen Latino male, it comes with a responsibility. It comes with a responsibility and an opportunity. And the responsibility is, you know, it's very similar to nuestras hermanas, right? Like, how do we make sure that everybody's thriving, that the community, that pueblo, la familia is moving forward? How do you continue to advance and grow to be the best person that you can be, to go up as high as you can be, you know, to be able to get to a place of influence and be able to enact change, right? And at the same time, it's an opportunity and a responsibility to look back and see, man, what are the things that we need to change, right? Like, as a first gen Latino male, like, machismo's a thing. And that's something that, you know, is embedded in a lot of nuestra cultura como Latinos. It's just like, machismo's a thing. Like, I remember my dad, I love my dad. He's a great guy, but this is one of those things I'm like, okay, I see some things that, you know, they need to change. I remember him telling me, like, when I started dating, he's like, I never want you to come and tell me that you're dating, you know, XYZ woman. I want you to date a Mexican woman. And I'm like, why? That was just so random. I'm like, why? So like, because Mexican women are very embedded in their culture and they know how to serve a man. And I remember just sitting there, I'm like, what the hell? Like, wow. Okay. Like, that is a statement right there. But I remember sitting there and thinking of my mom at that moment and just being like, nah, I refuse that. Like, I refuse to take that. And it was one of those things that throughout the years, I've learned to really identify those things within myself. You know, and there's always shadow sides, but identify those things within myself and what can we need to change, right? Then you also have the aspects of, like, as a man, there's the roles sometimes that get put on you as a Latino, right? Like, you're the oldest. If you're the oldest, well, that comes with responsibilities, right? I'm the oldest of my siblings. I have 2 younger brothers. I'm the oldest of all my primos, my cousins. So that comes with the thing.
El ejemplo, right?
It's just, you know, because I've had the chance to go to college, get an education, get a master's, you know, now we work in tech, we work in corporate, right? Like, all these other things. It just continues to go up and up and up. And with that comes more responsibility, more of these things. It's just like, man, how do you navigate this? Like, how do you, like, what do I do? Because a lot of times people are like, oh, you know what you're doing. I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just following the next thing. Like, I don't know. And there is a pressure sometimes because just like, how am I supposed to, like, balance my life and at the same time care for others? You know, like, yes, I have dreams of being able to help my family out. But at the same time, I gotta realize, I'm like, if I'm gonna start a family of my own one day, which is something I want, how am I gonna balance that? Right? As in the role that I have as a guy, as a male. And then to look around and see that there are some of us out here, and at the same time, there's not enough of us out here as Latino men. Like, within education, higher education, Black and brown men are actually all the way at the bottom. They really are. And there's no shame in what I'm about to say. Like, a lot of Black and brown men head into roles that are a little bit more geared towards, like, the technical aspects, like electricians, plumbers. It was great. We need all that stuff. And at the same time, we also need more men in leadership positions, men who are educated, men who are passionate, men who can contribute and influence in the world in variety of different ways, because the representation matters and there's not a lot of us out here. So at times I'm looking around and I see my Latinas, my hermanas killing it. And I'm like, that's great. I'm like, that's great. We can talk, we can relate, right? And I'm also sitting there and just like, but where are my brothers at? Like, you know, ¿dónde están mis hermanos? So it is a little bit, sometimes a little bit of like a lonely experience, because you're trying to navigate all these things. Not everyone's ready to talk about it. You're trying to change even a little bit of the masculine norms, the culture, the roles, all that stuff. And when you're in the front lines, you know, opposition comes, challenge comes. And it's just like, all right, how are you gonna deal with that? So kind of going all over the place, but even for me personally, navigating all of that it's been tough. There are moments where it's just like, there's feelings of loneliness, there's feelings of just like, am I the only one? Have I gotten this wrong? Would it be better to just conform to whatever masculine norm role thing is out there, because then it would be easier to find belonging? But then I see the toxicity that sometimes these things can bring, these roles can bring, these thoughts and patterns can bring, these mindsets can bring, that haven't benefited us as men or women, right? Or however we identify, they haven't just benefited us, right? And I see the damage it causes. I see the hard things, and I'm like, no, we got to continue to change. The battle is worth it. It's hard. There's lots of tears. There's a lot of sweat. There's a lot of work. There's everything that goes into it. But we got to continue to move forward if we're going to continue to grow and be the best people that we can be, because it's worth it.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking even systemically how much Black and brown men get targeted, marginalized, et cetera. Not to say women don't experience it, but Black and brown men, I mean, there's a different level of things to deal with. And when I say things, I mean, the first example that comes to my head is, you know, I grew up in a community that was low income, a lot of poverty. It was ghetto, it was the hood, right? And it was the best place to grow up. But me and my brothers had very different experiences in school, where they were always tested. They were always, people were always pulling their card. They were always ready to fight. They were always ready to defend. They were always ready to brawl, right? Whereas me, I'll keep it real. Like, I never fought in school. There was a few times where I got close, but te digo algo, I had a lot of friends, male friends, that always had my back. And they were always the ones that were like, nah, you ain't touching her, like, yo me pongo por medio. And that was my experience growing up and where I grew up. Like, my brothers, I saw them go into fights. I saw them post fights with all their blue eyes, their fat lip. Like, I saw that growing up, and I thought, thank God I'm not a man, because I don't want to deal with that. And that's a real thing. So I'm curious from your perspective, Lester, of like how much systemic stories are there behind why there is lack of Latino, Black, first-gen men in the spaces that you're in?
I mean, you know, the history, right? It wasn't built for people like us. That's one, right? Even from the beginning, it was never built with us in mind. And throughout the years, even though we had a fight just to get in, you know, you have these court cases, and, you know, I live down here in Southern California, Westminster versus, I forget the person's name, but it's the one that allowed Hispanic Latinos to go into Orange County schools. And it's the one that preceded Black versus Brown versus the Board of Education, right? Like, we've always had a fight to be in these spaces. We've always had a fight to just get in, to be represented, to be cared for, to be noticed, right? And as a man, sometimes it's just like, man, like, where's the respect? Like, because it wasn't built for people like us, because we weren't kept in mind, it's almost like it's a systemic disrespect that's always in your face, that's always there. And you, as a man, you try so hard. Like, respect means so much to us, because it's not an ego thing. It's not just a pride thing, but it's really as I see you as a human being, and I see you in all of who you are, your emotions, your knowledge, your personality, everything. And so there is it's a systemic disrespect because it's we're not acknowledged for the human beings that we are. We're a thing, you know, for so many people. And then once you're in it, you have to constantly fight the temptation to continue being who you are as a Latino male, right? We're loud, we're joking, you know, we bring the flavor, we're just ourselves, right? But then there's also that temptation to assimilate because that's how you advance. It's how you grow. You know, if I talk certain things, then I'm going to continue to move forward. But it's just like, no, I was with my cousin of mine and one of my only guy cousins, actually. And we were just laughing, having a good time. And I was telling him a little bit now about the place that I work in. And he's just like, so when you talk to people, do you talk to them differently? Because me and him were just like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, like I say this all the time, even in these spaces. And I'm like, man, what up, homie? Like, what's going on? And like, whatever, like. And people think it's funny that I use the word homie, I use the word foo, I use the word like all this slang that I throw in Spanish in there. And he tells me like, do you talk differently? And I'm like, I do. I use my white voice. I use my business voice. I use my professional voice, right? But it's because I've learned in these spaces, just like if you stick out, you know, you won't get that respect. If you are different, the chances of getting that respect as an individual, as a person, go down. And it is a fight that you have to face within yourself to not let that define you, not let that, you know, go out. And the temptation here, the tension, I should say, is how do you continue being yourself? And how do we redefine professionalism to include all of who we are? Right. And I know we've seen those conversations. I know what you and Plural are doing, man. You guys are doing, like, you know, doing some amazing things in that, because we need to continue. These stories are everywhere. We're constantly getting stereotyped just because of the way that we look. Like, I had a buddy of mine who was a director, always in a suit, always dressed up in a suit, really professional, one of the most nicest guys you ever meet. And he went to a reception desk one area, and he's just like, someone asked him, are you the janitor? Are you the gardener? Just simply because of the way he looked, because he's brown. And it's one of those things, just, and he looked at him, he's just like, no, I'm not. You know, he was very nice about it, but later on we were talking and he would tell him, he's just like, yeah, the disrespect that we're constantly facing. Like, these stories are real. Like, we're to see someone like us with our skin tone, with our skin color up in these spaces is different, because right away people notice it. Like, I've had experiences, if I'm honest with you, like, where I've been followed and seen in parking lots because of the way that I look. I remember one time people thought that I was going to steal a car just because I looked the way that I look. I've had people look at me a certain way just because it's just like, oh, you're brown, so you must know something like this, right? You must know certain things. You must be handy. You must be, I'm like, I know certain things, but it's just not because of the way that I look, right? It's not right. Just because of my background. So these stories that are always there, that have been there, do shape us and they get to us, right? But we have that choice whether or not we're going to let that really define us, or if we're going to get a chance to define ourselves and also influence the next generation and make way for the next generation of men so that they can thrive, right? So our communities can thrive, right. And that they don't have to face this.
You know, one thing that I can't stop thinking about what you were saying about systemic disrespect, like that, I feel like that's the most hurt thing you could say, like, you know, like, just give me respect. And I feel like that is what so many men in my life personally were chasing, is just like, treat me as a human being, like, respect me. And I just like that thing is like printed in my mind. It's like systemic disrespect because it's so real. One thing that I was thinking about as you were talking was, you know, redefining professionalism and this like cognitive dissonance that happens with us of like survival in the hood meant something very different than survival in corporate. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, you cursing to me in corporate? I have to learn how to like defend myself in corporate too. You know what I mean? Instead of saying my bitch, you have to be like, oh, okay, all right. But there's just this like weird, it's this cognitive dissonance of like the way our brains work. And it reminds me so much of what our parents had to go through. And it's very, very different than what we experienced. But thinking of my parents, like what did their cognitive dissonance feel like when they were in this country that was home, that was theirs? They knew the language, the culture, everything was hondureño, you know, everything was Honduras, to this country where it's a melting pot of a lot of different cultures, but you're also navigating a culture you don't know, a different language, a different way of living. I can't even imagine what that feels like, but in my situation, in my experience, and probably yours too, like our survival and our mechanisms that we learned in the hood were very different than what we're experiencing today. And there's still even like a moment for me where I think of, damn, I went to school for 4 years. I am making so much more money than my parents have made in their lifetime. And I'm sitting behind a desk while my dad was working construction, like yep. on a ladder, and my mom was cleaning houses. Like just the mind fuckery that happens with that. Like what? Like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just crazy. It's crazy to me. But I was thinking about this moment of redefining professionalism, navigating these corporate waters. One of my friends told me about wearing a gold chain. He's like, I can't wear my gold chain at work. I can't do it. And I was like, why? Why not? For context, he works in real estate. He works in a very, very white dominated place. He's like, I'm already that only black kid on the block. I can't wear my gold chain on top of that. And I was like, You can. He walked into his office with his gold chain, and he said, he called me after, and he's like, yo, no one says shit about my chain. And I was like, do you see how in our own heads we get about, and even if they do say anything, like, how did you feel walking in there with your gold chain and reclaiming that respect and that part of you that is part of who you are? And I was telling this story at an event during Hispanic Heritage Month, the one I got hired for. And I was telling this story about the gold chain. I kid you not, Lester, while I'm telling this story, there's a man on Zoom who literally takes out his gold chain and puts it over his shirt. And I was just like,
right there. That's
it was
beautiful.
It was a moment. It was a moment, because how often do we get these stories of people running against the current of what professionalism is supposed to look like? And how often do our people step up and say, you know what, I'm gonna wear the gold chain, or I'm gonna wear my big hoops, or I'm gonna wear my long nails with diamonds all over it? Like, how often do we get these narratives and stories where we can really just be ourselves in this space and have the equal amount of respect? Like, the stories matter. The representation matters.
The stories matter. You know, this past year, one of the things that I've been really thinking about is the phrase that keeps coming to mind is grounding myself in my identity and power. And where the reason I say that is because, kind of like the story of the chain, right? I realized one day, I'm like, why can't I send, it was something so small, but why can't I, at the end of an email, I always say thanks. Thanks, you know, comma, and then my name, right? Why can't I say gracias? I'm like, why can't I? Like, who said that I can't do that? So I started doing it. I started opening up my emails with hola, or, you know, something in Spanish. I started incorporating more and more Spanish. And it was one of those things, kind of like the gold chain, is just like, I'm just going to be me, because here's the reality. If people can consume my culture everywhere that they go, then they can definitely respect and learn about my culture wherever I go. If you could say the names of Starbucks, you know, grande, venti, if you could say these Spanish words throughout your everyday life, then you could definitely make the effort to understand what it means in these corporate spaces, right? So grounding ourselves in that power of our identity, and then bringing it to these spaces to, as you said, reclaim that, to be proud of that, to allow, to create those spaces for ourselves and others so that they can be themselves and let their light shine and see the beauty of who they are, their culture, their families, their stories. That's the thing right there. That's the goal. That's the cause.
That's right? The thing. That's the thing right there. And you know, the stories matter. And the reason I want to bold and italicize that is because I just saw my best friend after, you know, she's had her baby, she's been busy, and she was talking about going back to work because she works for a big tech company. And she told me, she's like, the people on your podcast, you, she's like, y'all have inspired me to walk onto campus and be 110% me. And previously, and shout out to my girl, I love you, girl. She talked about her fear of being a young mother, a young brown mother. She's half Black, half Mexican, I think a quarter Guamania. She's a little bit of everything. She has a little bit of everything, all the sazones.
Yeah.
But she talked
That's
about...
That's a full spice rack right there.
Full spice. That's what I told her. I was like, you a little bit of everything. But she talked about this fear of like being a young mother, of being a statistic, of being a stereotype in their minds, because she was working on a team that weren't, they didn't look like her. They didn't come from the same backgrounds as her. Also first gen. And she said, you know, she's been there for 4 years and this is the first time she's walked on campus feeling 100% herself. She's like, you know, like came back from mat leave and she's like, I'm going to walk in there, be totally me. And she's like, and I walk with a little like oomph in my step, you know, she's like, I walk with a little more confidence. I like talk with a little more confidence. And I'm like, that's the difference that people don't talk about. It's less about make space for me. I'm more of like, you're going to be happy once you make space for me because I can be 110% myself. I could be more confident in meetings. I could be more confident in my emails. I could be more, I could walk with a little more sazon, right? I could walk mm-hmm. around with a little more oomph in my step because that's what being yourself and claiming yourself and being, like you said, rounded in your identity, that's what that brings you, is a sense of security in yourself. And it doesn't matter where you come from. Doesn't matter whether you say homie or you say dude, like, it, all that matters is that you're coming in here being 100% you and doing amazing work that only you can do. And so it just feels like we're slowly, as a culture, moving toward that a little bit closer, right? Like little by little, paso a paso. But exactly. I think it also comes with education for people to learn how to consume all that space we're taking up, because I think that's part of it. And it's one of those things, like, we just want a piece of the pie. We don't want your whole pie. Like, yeah. We just want a piece of it. Like, make space for me. But it takes time. And I think we're, as a culture, doing better on that. So our stories make a difference. Go wear that gold chain, y'all. Go be your husband. Yes. Go say homie. Say gracias. Say siempre. Say all the things in an email.
You know, wear those things. Wear what you got to wear. Be who you got to be. Say what you got to say. I mean, all these things, you know, I know that the message is just like, always be fully yourself. And I know that the temptation is just like, nah, I really can't. But yeah, you can. If we have the courage and the resilience to do it, trust. And you said it dead on, mi amiga, like, you feel better. You feel better. You feel yourself. And you are shining. And that's the way that's what we were created to do, is to shine through and be fully ourselves. So, amen to
and
that.
Life's a little more fun. Life's a little more fun.
Life's
that
a
way
lot
too.
More fun. Yep.
I'm like, it's 40 hours of your week. Do you really want to not be yourself? Right? Like, that's just exhausting. Like, life is way better when you get to just be 100% yourself. And I won't lie, there's moments where I'm like, do I want to show all the flavor right now? And then I'm like, you know what? Why not? Why not? This is the moment. And it's a daily practice to be 100% you when we're conditioned to that not being okay. Like, we're conditioned that behavior is like unprofessional, or that behavior is not okay. It's a constant unlearning and consistent daily practice, but we're getting there
little by little.
I have so many more questions for you, but I realize I feel like I took up most of this time talking about your experience, which I love. And I want to ask you one last question before we go into our graficito and chisme. But I think you're doing amazing things right now for the community, for a lot of Black and brown first gen men, first gen Latinos, Latinas, first gen folks in general. Can you explain, in your experience, what does first generation mean?
Ooh, that's a great question. Being first gen, to me, in my experience, means, you know, oh man, it's so deep. Being first gen, it means living. Oh man. Yeah, you hit me deep on that one. embodying the stories and the beauties of where we come from and living that out courageously. That's what it means to me. Embodying, you know, the stories and experiences of where we come from and living that out courageously, because really in that title, right, being the first to do something, you're stepping into unknown places. You're stepping into things that you may have no experience in. You're trying out new things that with little guidance at times or alone, you're going to take that risk to wear the thing, to say the thing, to be yourself. But when you really look back and you appreciate where you come from, you know the story, you know the history, you're able to take all of that and apply it to your life and live that out and celebrate it and really let it impact you, then you're able to find what you need to move forward and do it. And once you do it, you're going to realize, dang, I can do it, and I can do it again, and I can do it again. You know, so to me, it's the merging of the past, the future, the past into the present so that you can impact the future, you know? So.
I knew. I was like, one of my things that I'm practicing is allowing silence. And I was like, I know he's going to come up with something amazing, so I'm going to keep it silent. I'm going to keep it silent. One last question for you. I lied. One last question for you. How can Latina women show up for our hermanos, the men in our lives? How can we show up for our first-gen men?
Remember, we're human too. Remember, we're human too, that we don't have. In the culture, it's very easy, especially as a man, to pretend that you have it all figured out when we really don't. Because we're conditioned to not be vulnerable. We're conditioned to not show that those vulnerabilities, that weakness. We have to have it all together. We have to know the answer, all these things. And I know that my Latina woman can relate to that as well. But remember that that's also part of our experiences. Even if we don't show it, it doesn't mean that we're not feeling it. It doesn't mean that we're not experiencing it. We are. So remember, we're human too. Allow, and if a man is really safe and honest with you, and allow and is able to really pour out his heart to you that way, that's a blessing, that's a privilege. And let's care for each other in the best way with that. You know, it goes both ways. So there's a lot more. That's a huge passion topic, so dang it. But yeah, I would say with that.
Oh, we can have a part two all about that.
Oh,
how
let's
can
do
we
it.
Show up?
Let's
because I think that's really important, right? We talk about how does the world show up for us? But I think how do we show up for each other? How do Latino men show up for Latina women? Vice versa.
Yeah, 100%.
And I love that you said we're human too. So thank you for that. And to all the Latinas listening, let's show up for our men who
yes, please.
Have a lot of systemic disrespect, and we can help show up for them. Thank you, Lester. I want to go into our brief, Cafecito en Chisme, okay, where we talk about what are you up to now and how can people connect with you?
Yeah, definitely. So right now I'm in the process actually of starting my own podcast, actually. People have told me with the voice thing, it's just like, well, you know what? Let me give it a try. I don't know if it's going to take off. I don't know what's going to happen.
That podcast,
you know,
voice, though, he got
right?
it.
I was just like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And really, it's kind of going to be focused on the things that we're talking about, is specifically with Black and brown men. And it's going to be called Hola Rey. And a little bit of a quick story with that. It came from my dad. My dad greets myself and my brothers. And I didn't notice this until this past year. He always calls us Rey. It was just a nickname that he just thing, right? And then, but every time I go up to him, he's like, Hola Rey, ¿cómo estás? And so to me, I'm like, Why did I not realize that my dad has always been speaking identity, power, truth, and love to me? And when that hit me, I'm like, all right, we got to do that for other guys too. We got to do this for the men in our lives too. So, you know, a little bit to come. And then working with a nonprofit right now to do some work in Nicaragua, providing education, social services, community development programs. So can hit me up on LinkedIn, Instagram, LLarios116, and you know, if there's ways to get involved, I'm always here to serve as well, volunteer. I love to give back and just do whatever I can to continue helping out, you know, nuestra cultura, nuestra familia, el pueblo, but anybody else who's a part of this journey as well. So,
yeah. Snaps for all the things that you're doing. And yeah, we'll be the first to listen. I already know for Hola Rey, which I love, 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 love that your dad called y'all that. I want to do our closing, our brindis. And so I have my cafecito conmigo. And I want to do a virtual cheers with you where I give you the space to say what you want to manifest for our Latino community and what you want to cheers to. So take it away.
All right. You know, here's salud for nuestro pueblo, nuestra familia. You know, many blessings, many health, you know, flourishing, thriving this year, opportunities, adventures, life, joy, laughter, all the good things to come in this year. Because really, the more that we could soak that up and the more that we can give that back out into the world, that's the greatest gift that we can have. So,
salud, amigo. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
As always, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to these episodes. Go connect with Lester right now on Instagram at llarios116 and find him on LinkedIn. And huge moment of love, gratitude, y respeto to all my first-gen men, Latino men, Black and brown men. We see you. We love y'all. And as a first-gen Latina, una mujer, I promise to do my part to continue showing up for y'all. Come through next week for more Cafecito and Chisme. For all Hella Latino updates, follow Hella Latino Podcast on Instagram. My personal Instagram is also up the grabs. Follow me at ojasmine4as and find me on LinkedIn. For more insight, more info, visit my website, olalisjasmine.com. Y como siempre, con mucho amor, tu amiga hondureña.